Welcome to the Beer Driven Devs podcast, where your hosts, Matt Goldman and Liam Elliott, share their experiences and passion for technology, software, and of course, beer. So be sure to grab yourselves a cold one and join them for this week's chat.
Hello, Liam. Hello.
Matt, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing very well, and I'm just going to throw this one back in your face because this is what you said in the opening of the last episode. To paraphrase, Liam, you look like shit.
Yeah, thanks.
Which isn't exactly what you said to me, but but I'm just not going to beat around the bush.
No, it was, I think I was on a call last night up until about 11:30 with the UK, and then an early morning this morning going for a run, woken up in the middle of the night by my daughter who had a bad dream and was tossing and turning, came into our bed and then tossing and turning all night, so... Yeah, it's been a long day. But enough about us, Matt. Today,
enough about us.
Today, we've actually got a special guest on, someone who I guess could almost help out in this space of my children taking up a lot of my time.
Isn't that what they're for?
Well, yes. And by that, I guess we should introduce Lucy Quinlan from Villy. So as a bit of background here, I've mentioned in the past, Matt, I was helping out a startup midway through last year, I believe, Luce, from a friend of mine who came up with this idea, and my friend Susie and Lucy got together and kicked off this startup. So I thought it'd be awesome to have Lucy on, especially based on, and I've sort of pre-warned Luce about the episode earlier, Can You Afford a Tech Startup? Because I think this is going to tie in nicely with that, because you had your opinions and your thoughts, Matt, from the tech perspective. And at the same time, Luce and Susie have no technical ability. Correct me if I'm wrong there, Lucy.
No, you're right.
And so I'd love to hear it from that perspective. So to stop me from rambling too much more, hi, Luce, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thank you so much for having me, I suppose. Susie's not here. It's just me tonight. So thank you for having me.
So I guess before we jump too far into it, did you want to dig into what exactly Villy is and does?
Yeah, sure. So Villy is a two-way marketplace, that connects busy families with verified helpers. So when we say verified helpers, it's people that are on the app looking to boost their incomes, doing practical support around the home. But rather than it just being, you know, go to Facebook and throw your wishes to the wind and hope that someone out there in a mother's group or a community group responds with exactly what you're looking for. It's a targeted approach, kind of like if you're catching an Uber, you put it out to drivers. So the idea is if you're looking for home support, practical support. So we're not talking cleaners. We feel, you know, the cleaning market is saturated. Domestic care for children is quite saturated insofar as, you know, babysitting and all those sorts of things. And what we felt was really actually missing was that practical support for families who physically do not have the time to get to the things that need to be done on a daily basis. So whether that be resetting the home so you're not coming back to dried cereal crusting on your dinner table or piles of laundry that just is like it's a later thing, or staying up until midnight trying to catch up on your, I like to call it your 5 p.m. to 9 rather than your 9 to 5 job. So you do your 9 to 5 and then come home and do your 5 to 9. So we're all rushing around doing these jobs that just build resentment against partners and resentment against children and, you know, put a lot of strain on your family and the family dynamic. So we just thought, how can we improve the support that's out there for families? And so that's where, that's where this whole concept, I guess, was born. So yeah, it's an app. But yes, you're right. Neither of us had technical experience and our why is coming from the fact that both of us busy mums and in a position where we really felt drawn to the idea of supporting people practically. And Susie, coming from the psychological background, being a psychologist, she just saw it in this day-to-day, that sort of minefield of mental health and, you know, what do I do next after children and identity shifts and all of that. Yeah. So it's a really interesting space and we've been going for about 2 years now, which
That's
is
great.
Yeah, which is wild.
The two, if you're at the 2 year mark, you've already beaten that. What's the percentage of startups that fold after the first year? It's a big percentage, isn't it? So you've beaten that milestone. You're doing pretty well.
Yeah, Susie and I always refer back to it to, you know, the health around co-founder health. What is it that fails startups in it? You know, it lends to what you were talking about in your previous episode around, can you afford it? So it's money and fallouts with co-founders is what we found to be those two really pivotal moments. We can get to the afford later, but I think with Susie and I, we've just got this most incredible relationship and we're both not afraid to have those confronting and robust conversations when things perhaps not feeling great on either side. So that's something that I think that we do really well. In fact, a lot of kudos to Susie on that she drives that a lot. I'm very open-minded around, you know, making changes and going with the flow. But yeah, of course, things ruffle your feathers. Like they always do. So yeah, relationships is a big thing for sure.
And I'd like to ask you a question about your app, your product. Mm-hmm. Just when you were describing it earlier, when you were giving the kind of the elevator pitch, I guess, there's a word that you used when you were describing it that you said differentiates it from posting in a Facebook group or something like that. The word you used was verified.
Mm-hmm.
So how does verified work in this space?
So with our app, we've actually gone through this journey, and Liam, we've made some significant changes since talking to you, because I suppose there's the perfect world in what you're trying to achieve and what's physically possible in the world when you're managing onboarding. And give you a bit of background. So how Susie and I met was I was running my own small business called Mother's Help. And she actually came to me on my inquiry line. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing, because you're thinking the thing that I know needs. And what I was struggling with at that point in time was the demand was just so great. I was getting inquiries from Queensland and Western Australia. At one stage, I got something from Canada and London. My SEO just must have been so strong. And I think it was just based on the fact that I was Mother's Help. Like that was my URL. So I was really strong in that space, but I couldn't service anyone really further than Sydney. At my largest, I had 9 employees and 2 contractors. So it was at a body of like 11 or 12 people on the go at any time. But I just started to feel as though I worked for my staff. And I always thought, well, I don't want to fold this business because I feel like the space needs it. And I also don't want to franchise it, because again, I don't want to work for other people in that space. But the way I imagined it was any person with a heart and some, you know, experience of running a household can do this type of work. And wouldn't it be incredible if anyone could jump on and do it? So coming back to your question about how do you verify it, when I was with my staff, it was very easy to follow protocol and say, if you want to be onboarded, you have to go and get a police check and I will make sure you do your first aid and working with children's and all of that. But realistically, that's not possible when we're talking about 2,000, which we've just cracked 2,000 helpers on board. Yeah, it's really incredible. Thank you. It's just not possible to do that. So what we were finding was that it was okay to ask people to upload their police check and upload their working with children's checks, which we still do. But we've actually discovered that a lot of clients don't actually want that. A lot of clients want to know that if something goes awry, that we do have their personal details. So we know what their first name and their last name is. And all of that is actually something that happens through Stripe when they upload their bank account to be paid. So their ID is verified at that point in time. So that's how we can confidently say that these people are verified and there's a connection there. So if for whatever reason, we got, you know, mobile numbers and all those sorts of things. So they're verified in that respect. But what we found was in this scaling and onboarding, you're trying to onboard people in this sort of demand and supply juggle at such a rate that we were finding that actually there were quite a lot of clients that said, no, I would prefer to see a handful of 8 to 10 helpers. They don't necessarily need to have a police check if they've got a working with children's check, or they might not even need either of those. Actually, what I care about more is just having a chat and having a genuine intuition feeling that I like this person, or that they live down the road, or they've been recommended. So what we had to do, I had to at this point, I suppose, in the business, was take myself out of it and go, actually, I'm pushing what I think is important on these people when we're all grown-ups. And if you're presented with a menu, perhaps it's better to be presented with a big menu making sure that we've got all of their details, of course. But we did, we made a significant shift in this whole you need a police check to onboard. And since that time, we feel as though clients are having a better experience because they feel more in control. Yeah.
I have a long way to
answer your question.
That's amazing, because I do recall like there was a lot of effort put into getting those police checks done at the time.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting to see like at the early stages, what you feel is extremely important and critical for your product to serve in the way you intend it to be served. But then in reality, when the users are using it, they're not less concerned about this.
It's really, yeah.
I think there was a few times, a lot of calls that we ended up having when we're trying to get that release date out. Quite a few times I remember just sitting there saying, okay, do we need it? Is this something we can just cut? Does it have to be there for the MVP? And I guess hindsight's amazing then, isn't it? Like, here's a feature that probably could have been removed early on. But you don't know, right? Just don't know these lessons.
I remember that conversation from the episode, Liam.
Yeah?
I think you might have mentioned that in passing or something along those lines.
I think that's why they kicked me off the calls in the end, because I just kept telling them to.
No. Trim the fat.
You just got to cut it. Cut.
Liam wouldn't like this, but yeah, that's it. No, I was listening to your previous episode and it really resonated with me, this whole idea of your MVP. Almost don't ever think that your MVP is going to be what it is down the track. And we are currently in a position now where I personally feel, actually, I know we spent way too long in building it, but it comes back to what you guys have spoken about in previous episodes, is that we don't have the technical background. We didn't know. The fact that we got to this stage is just a miracle. I mean, we went into it not knowing anything. And
you may see it as a miracle, but from the outside perspective, the team that you and Suze have pulled together and the level of expertise and people that I've met on the calls with you, I think is the reason why you managed to pull it off. And that is by no miracle. That is because that is the teams that you guys could pull together.
Yeah.
And that was not an accident at all.
No. I remember having very early conversations with Susie and I, like, are we going to do this? Yeah, let's do this. How are we going to do it? I don't know. Let's kind of work it out. And I decided that digging into, you know, we all go through chapters of our lives and, you know, your childhood life and then your teenage, early adult, uni days. And I'm like, who can help me? Who can do this? Anyway, the person that we ended up landing on, it was lucky. I grew up in Asia, so there was a bit of a background there. And I actually was able to pull on some people that still had connections in Asia. So again, like what you're talking about with Fiverr and reaching out and do you know if they're trustworthy and, you know, are they mid-range, high-range? Like, you've got to find someone that kind of fits the bill that you can communicate with, all of those things that are important. I was able to find someone that I went to primary school with, who had since had experience in Silicon Valley and doing some things, but he'd actually moved back home to Indonesia. And it was just by chance that everything sort of fell into place. Mm. He was looking for a project at the time. He's not on board with us anymore. In fact, one person from that chapter of the build is still with us, which is incredible because he's a genius. But yeah, in those, this particular guy that I went to school with, he was just so knowledgeable and was able to educate us on what we needed and move forward with that. I was also very lucky to have a person that I worked in a pub with in my 20s who is now our CTO, and he's worked in other marketplaces in Sydney and has just this wealth of experience and, you know, a friend of mine for 20 years. So, you know, we can pull on people's knowledge but with that knowledge also sort of like a deeper trust and friendship as well, which I think is really important because they also willing to come on this journey with us to, in a hope that it succeeds. So yeah. It's been incredible. Can we afford it? We're hoping that it pays off.
Well, you're still here, so that's a good sign.
Yes.
Yeah, we're still here. And yeah, we love it. It's really exciting, you know, to see a mum who is abroad, post a job for her daughter who's just had a baby, her third child, can't be there. I'm granny. I feel really sad that my daughter's suffering through these early stages of early parenting, blah, 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 long story. And then to see her make a connection today and I get like a notification on my phone to say, you know, and you just go, yes, this is, yeah, it's working. It's this girl, yeah, would otherwise have gone without. So it's, yeah, it's really beautiful. And then the helper also, she can work close to home and build an income around her own family life and, you know, feel like she's offering, you know, invaluable support. So yeah, it's incredible.
That's great. It must be so rewarding to, you know, not just build something that's a business and start to see it flourish and bloom and be successful, but something that's really bringing meaningful change to people's lives as well. It must be incredibly rewarding.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, the thought to start Mother's Help all those years ago came to me when I was lying there. I had a 6-month-old and a 2.5-year-old. And I just thought to myself, when are these sheets going to be changed? Like, that was the moment. Mm. I remember it so clearly and just thinking, why do I have to do this? I'm exhausted and I don't think I want to or have the strength to do it now or tomorrow or when is it going to happen? And my sister used to come over to my house and just whip around and do things without being asked. And I remember thinking, I just kind of want to bottle you and sell you to people because you're just so useful. And it was the practical support. Like, I'm going to start whipping up a bolognese and vacuum your floor and hang out the laundry. I'm only here for 2 hours, but how that made you feel was incredibly supported. And so, yeah, it kind of just built from there that if I felt that way, surely that we as a society and a community are not doing enough for parents in that, yeah, struggle state. So yeah, it's been really cool.
That's great. I have lots of questions, and as we keep talking, I'll continue to have more. You know, we haven't gone anywhere near the tech yet. But
No, sorry.
So going back to this pivot that you made around the police checks and the hard requirements that you had, two questions around that. So just to clarify, and I feel like I understand this already, but I just want to clarify. So what you have now is you haven't removed that completely. It's just no longer a baseline requirement. So when you say there's a menu, people can see what level of checks people have provided, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So their user profiles as a helper have all of those things listed. What we had done at the beginning was we created the police check was a gateway. So you physically could not apply for jobs, you could not engage with clients, you couldn't even really see what was out there until you added your police check. But that we found was actually an enormous blocker. People were onboarding and signing up to that point and then just dropping off because they were either, oh, this is too hard, or I don't really trust this brand. It's not something that we're not ever thinking that we might do again down the track, again, if demand calls for it. But what we found is that we needed to pivot because we were finding just a small percentage of people were actually going through that last hurdle. So yeah, it was not something that we've taken off entirely. In fact, all the steps stay the same. It's just that the code allows them access earlier and it puts people with police checks at the top of anybody's searches. So they're, I guess, our recommended people. But at the end of the day, we've educated the client base to say, hey, some will come through with them, some will come through without them. You can see if they've got, you know, anything else that might take your interest, whether that be first aid certificates or, you know, childcare education or whatever it looks like. But it's up to you. So giving the power to the client and allowing them.
So they can filter based on that, right?
Yes.
So I can really see the benefit. And it comes back to, I think, what you were saying, which is that there are probably a percentage of your clients that appreciate that and want it. But then there are probably more who are frustrated due to lack of availability of bodies and just think, oh, I don't care about that. I just want someone available. So it's great that they have that choice and that option. So I'm curious, how did you come to that conclusion? How did you get that feedback? How did you get to the point where you managed to get that input from your customers and your users where you were able to determine, actually, we're wasting ours and their time here. Let's give the people what they want.
Yeah. Lots of phone conversations. So we're still, you know, we refer to it, are we still in this sort of agency model where I still get like phone calls responding from clients saying, oh, can you help get some people across the line for me? Because, you know, they're responsive or whatever, because people are still in that really early stages of using the app. But ultimately those decisions came down from talking to a lot of people saying, hey, if you've got 3 great applicants here, but what if you had 15? And they say, oh, yeah, I like these 3 applicants, but, you know, their profile pictures are a bit weird. And I'm like, oh, that's not a good excuse. And so then you're starting to realize, actually, maybe people are wanting to have a more human interaction with these people. Maybe they actually just want to see lot and you go with the person who you most like. Like, I know that seems really crazy, but ultimately, what is a piece of paper or your gut feel, or my kids go to the same school as yours, or I know you from down the street, or, you know, oh, you work at my supermarket. Yeah, I kind of know you. Oh, you don't have a police check. I don't care about that. Yep. But that conversation and that opening would never have happened had we not allowed them to make the choices. So what we found was it was a massive unlock, I suppose, to the database that we already had.
Yeah, it's quite an intimate thing, isn't it? Sort of having someone come into your home, especially when you're talking about, what was it, not coming home to dried cornflakes on the counter. You know, you're not talking about people coming into your home. You're talking about people coming into your home in the way that you don't let your closest friends and family see it, right?
Yeah.
You mad scramble before people come over. It's like, no, my
house is folding your laundry. You don't ask your friends to fold your laundry, right?
That's right.
100%. 100%. And it's a thing, right? I mean, I've actually built friendships out of working as a mother's helper. Yeah. And it got to the point where I was doing it before my son went to primary school. And then when he went to primary school, all of our kids were starting to go to school together and they were like, we don't think you can be our helper anymore because I want you to be my friend and I want our kids to be friends and not for you to seem like, you know. And so it wasn't that I kind of got shafted, but they were like, I think we need to find someone new because now we're your friends.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that is a thing. So it's more like that whole clean up before the cleaner because you don't even really want the cleaner to see how you. Yeah, yeah. But that's the thing that you go, wouldn't it be nice if for one or 2 days a week I didn't have to take the bins out to empty the dishwasher, these monotonous tasks that you just, hope that one day you just get a bit of,
and I haven't done it yet.
A bit of respite from, you should post that to Billy.
Yeah. So I have one more question and then we can move on from this bit. So just keeping on with this change that you made around the police check and working with children and all the other gates that you had beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
So now you've removed that and you've given people choice and they've got an option, which is great, right? And it's obviously been a successful change. You've seen a lot of growth come out of that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess what the last question around this that's in my mind is, who owns the risk around that? And how do you, I mean, there's one thing, which is putting up terms and conditions, right? But with this, there's probably, I would imagine that you feel a sense of responsibility of ensuring that your clients and users are educated and aware of their position and their responsibility around this risk as well. Because, you know, you don't want to end up in a situation where someone comes back to you and says, something went wrong with this person. How could you let this happen? And you don't want to have to say, well, you know, you chose the person with no profile picture and no verified identity or police check. You've got to accept some responsibility for that.
Mm.
So the two questions were, you know, who owns the risk and how do you ensure that your users are educated about that? And I suspect that along with that pivot from those gates that you had probably came a shift of the risk profile as well. Because I'm sure you'll correct me if I'm wrong here, but I suspect that before that, you probably owned all the risk and you probably had various different statements in your policies around, you know, we ensure to the highest level, so on and so forth, which you may have found a relaxing of that there as well.
Yeah, it's tough. The idea is we've always held as an intermediary. So we're like a message board connecting people. But ultimately, we carry insurance for both parties. We've never had to draw on any of it, which is, you know, touch wood. But ultimately, these people are running their own small businesses. So they themselves are sole traders. And when they set up their profile through Stripe, so Stripe Australia, Stripe Connect is the way that they're paid. Nothing actually comes to us, if that makes sense. So the fees are paid from the client actually stay in escrow and then go straight to the helper, but we take a little clip on the way through. So ultimately, we do try and keep everything at arm's length. And like you say, the terms and conditions all state that they are operating under their own body. But yeah, how we manage that risk, I suppose it's just in the education, I suppose, of our helpers. We talk about it a lot with our clients around, you know, they are their own people, and I'm not going to, what's the word? You know, if you're pushing out an employee, you can say, oh, I can really vouch for this person. This person's great. Like we never use that sort of language around, you know, oh, I know, blah, blah, blah. We it's we work on reviews. So it's a very peer-reviewed platform as well. So ultimately, that takes time to grow. But we are starting to see our regular clients and helpers starting to build up a bit of a review base, which again, will play into their trust and building trust with the other users on the platform. So yeah, I don't really know how to answer that question.
I mean, well, no, that absolutely does answer it.
Yeah.
And it's funny because this is actually something that Liam and I talk about a lot as well.
Yeah.
In a different context, which we won't go into now. But yes, absolutely. Yeah. No, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And ultimately that decision, like it didn't come lightly at all. In fact, I was quite against it for quite some weeks. It didn't feel great to me in the first instance, but I guess the long and the short of it is that we are grown-ups making these decisions, and 9 times out of 10 people will be home at the point when they're having someone come. But yes, absolutely, things do happen, and you know, you knock over a vase or a picture frame, and we're going to ultimately hope that if something does go wrong, they'll be minor.
Yep.
But yeah, public liability for our contractors, not our contractors, is probably the biggest thing. Yeah.
There's probably a whole episode we could do just talking about that process of letting go and getting past that and that period of those weeks that you went through.
Yeah.
So how did you were you swayed on your own? Did you eventually just kind of crunch the numbers in your head, or were you influenced by Liam? Were you influenced by Susie? Do you want to talk us through it a bit?
It was, I would say that it was Susie did more of the conversations around coming to that decision, working out what are the blockers. And we did find from the data showed that a lot of people got to that point in the process and realized, I don't want to spend $50 to $100 on a certificate for a platform that I don't necessarily know is going to reward me in the way that they're saying they're going to. I could hand on heart tell these people 1,000 times that you will make that money back in the first hour of working. But unfortunately, it's just human nature, I suppose. They want to know that they're signing up to something that's reputable. And that in itself is starting a new brand in a niche market was incredibly challenging. So yeah, and it was a big decision to make.
And like you said earlier too, once they've got confidence with the platform and they're on board and they can start to get experience, they'll realize that they're missing out on jobs because they don't have it.
Correct.
And then they can invest in it.
Correct. And we're at a point where the code, like I said earlier, the code recognizes people with police checks first. Mm. So say you get a handful of 15 applicants to a job and only 3 of them have got police checks, they'll be the ones that are featured at the top.
Yep.
So for us, that's our way of pushing the people that we think are the strongest.
Yep.
Or, yeah, whether now, they go with them, they're up to them.
Now, I want to ask specifically about the challenges you guys faced in the development process, the part where you had to call me in. As non-technical founders, building out this technical product to the point where I remember going for a walk and walking my dog one night and running into Susie. She called up Sarah, my wife, and said, I need to speak to Liam. We went for a walk and she's just telling me she was having troubles getting this platform up and running, and she was having troubles with the development team. I just want to start to dig into that side of things, because Matt and I, we come from that technical side of things. And as we keep referring to that episode about, can you afford the tech startup? I think Matt's conclusion there was not if you're not technical.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite. My conclusion was, and this is going to lead into a question that we'll ask you, is that my conclusion was that if you're building a technology company and you're not technical, you need to fill that gap somehow.
100%.
And you need to understand how you're going to cover that cost. Yeah. And I think the big light bulb moment for a lot of people, and I think this is probably where Liam's going, is suddenly the realization that actually they're a technology company, which a lot of companies don't realize. And in your case, you know, what you're building is a platform for people to provide a service, effectively mothers that need the help, which doesn't seem at first brush like a technology company, but you've probably had a moment where you suddenly realized, wow, we're a tech startup.
Mm-hmm.
And how was that?
You're right. It is. It's a lot. Like I never thought that I would be in my day-to-day dealing with developers. I mean, my background is business and sales. It's not this. But I think that, And Susie says it best, is where the why is strong enough, you'll find a way. And for us, that, I suppose, is sort of our driving mantra. So yes, we've had a lot of support. We've both got incredibly supportive husbands. So I'm not the, I suppose, main breadwinner as such. So for me to be able to work on something in the background was feasible. So it wasn't taking me away from a career that I was already doing, because I was only ever, I was only, you know, adding to the family finances in a small amount anyway. So I suppose if you're the main breadwinner, it, yeah, I would say it's would be almost impossible, because you, especially if you're not from a tech background, is how do you know you're on the right path?
Mm.
And I suppose with the phone call that was made to Liam, when we needed to reach out for some support, it got to a point where we didn't know if we were being led up the garden path, because we couldn't even read what we were trying to achieve. Does that make sense? I couldn't jump in and know where we were up to. And were we just being told, like, fabricated, yeah, it's all good, yeah, we're on track. It's like, I haven't seen it. Why haven't I seen it? Oh, yeah, it's coming. It's coming. I'm like, oh, I think we need to get someone who we trust to get in there and have a look, because even if we wanted to, we couldn't. So that in itself is challenging. And I'm, you know, slowly teaching myself how the database works and all of those sorts of things. But I don't think that even if I try forever, I'll be nearly as good as people where it's like an innate skill. So back to what Liam was asking, I suppose it got to a point where it actually got to crunch time where we felt as though it was quite, the MVP was quite ready, but without the financial connection to Stripe Australia and to see transactions going through, I knew we weren't ready to go to market, because if you can't take money, then how is this thing ready to go to market? And that was where we just couldn't get it over the line. That and a few other things that we were struggling with. But it was mainly, I feel like, the big gatekeeper was the fact that our original team couldn't link the final piece of the puzzle together. We knew we needed new brain power to certain aspects. But Susie and I couldn't tell you what that was. We can't read code.
It's interesting, because I don't think that's an uncommon scenario. Mm. And a client of yours, Matt, that comes to mind, that you've been pulled in because they were not getting the value from their previous vendor.
Yeah.
Right. And then they've called you up to say, hey, can you help us out here? Because we don't know what we're getting from this other vendor.
Yeah.
So I don't think you guys are alone then.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just one example Liam's giving there, but this is bread and butter for consultants like us. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. This is very common.
Yeah. Where even I think the organization that we went with, it was just a very small agency. This person that I went to school with, he had his own little agency. They got us so far in the piece, but even in the initial scope, I don't believe that he realized just how big this thing was going to get. So because it's a two-sided marketplace, it's essentially building two, where we have built it under one app. So it's unlike Uber rider versus Uber driver, and they've got two different apps that, you know, somehow talk to each other. Ours is all under one app. So I always just kind of thought it was one app. But then I started to realize as we went further down the path, it was sort of like, oh, no, actually, they're kind of doing two things. It's actually two things, and this is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And it got to the point where, it's no disrespect to anyone. It was just perhaps we just reached the end of our road together.
Yeah,
our needs changed and the scope changed. But for as far as we got and for the design and the initial concept, it's still the same as what it was. Yeah. Absolute, nothing but praise for that team. Yeah, it just got to the point where you'd all natural relationships, I suppose, come to an end.
And you know, that's fine too. That happens. Again, this is something that Liam and I see a lot, and it goes back to that, you know, the can you afford a tech startup episode. I think a lot of people, and I'm not talking about non-technical people, I'm talking about technical people, right? They encounter a concept and they think, yes, that's straightforward, and it's the golden hammer thing, right? Is you think that what you know is the right solution. And I mean, we're just tying together so many different things that we talk about all the time. It's, you know, it's the Dunning-Kruger curve as well, right? There comes a point when you look at something and you think that's actually a lot more complex than it seems on the surface.
100%.
And again, there's so many different things that we've spoken about before on this podcast, where, you know, about the tools and the ways that you dig into that and you uncover it. But the more experience you have, not just in the from a technology perspective, but from a consulting perspective, the more you start to peel back those layers and start to understand just how big something is.
Mm. It just, while you've been saying that, I mean, from the beginning, I just thought, oh, yeah, build the app, people will use it. Not realizing, oh, you need a whole system to manage the database. Like, how? What is the system? What's the dashboard that our support team are going to need? And where's the dashboard that can dissect the data from Superbase and pull it into something beautiful that's really simple to use for again another non-technical person who's on the phones or whatever? And then how do you keep admin notes and all of that? So now we've got not only this app that I thought was going to be one app that's actually kind of two apps masked as one app versus we've got most incredible dashboard that our current CTO is just freaking whiz at, and it's just incredible, to our website that's, you know, added heaps of pages, to being able to sort of have a play with the app before you actually download the app to get a test run of it, because what we were finding was that people were downloading the app, not knowing anything about it, signing up, and then it was fudging our data a little bit, because we were like, oh, they were only here as tire kickers, and we don't really want that data, because then that's kind of wasting our time too, because we think there's 40 people near this job, but actually there's 12, because a few of them are useless. So yeah, all of these things have come from scratching the surface. You go, oh, we did that, but now it's turned into this enormous thing. So yeah, still ticking along, probably find something else to do tomorrow. It's bigger and bigger. But yeah, you should check out the website now. It's much better and more complicated and everything than it was, what it was last year anyway, Liam. So yeah.
I'm having a look at it now. Yeah.
So yeah. I was going to make sure we ask this again and we're at the end, and I'll make sure we put the link in the episode's page. Mm. But where would people go to see your website?
Oh, thank you. It's villey.co. So villey.co.
Yeah. I'm going to have a look right now.
I'll do. Yeah. So what we found was that we wanted to have a database of all of our helpers, you know, happy, smiling people with, you know, being able to read their blurbs and, like we were talking about before, what are their security checks? What's their experiences? A little photo of themselves. Soon to be able to initiate your onboarding to the app via the website. So we're primarily app-based at the moment, but to have an integration with the website so you can start doing it to a certain point from the dashboard, from your desktop, sorry, just as a nicety way to warmly onboard people without making them straight away download the app. So that's a cool feature coming. But also the jobs board. So someone thinking about maybe using it and going, oh, is there jobs near me? Oh my gosh, there's heaps of jobs near me. Yeah, I might sign up and use this. This is cool.
Yep.
So rather than joining a babysitting group on Facebook and kind of hoping that someone might post for the weekend The great thing about Villy as well is that the vast majority of the jobs that are booked, that are listed, are recurring. So for us, in terms of revenue, it's generally a weekly or fortnightly arrangement. So not only is that great for the helper because they're able to secure this ongoing sort of work, but for us, it's not constantly finding a new cell. So we've got these recurring bookings rolling in the background, but people still use the app to do their processing. The great thing about it is that one of my biggest pet hates is paying invoices. I hate paying bills. I hate feeling like I've got reminders in my inbox. Oh yeah, got to get to that. Whereas if at the point of making the agreement that, oh, you're going to come to my house and do 2 hours or whatever, it's set and forget. I don't have to ever think about the fact that Joe's coming around to help me and she's great and this, and she's going to lock up as she leaves. It just gets deducted. So yeah, the integration with Stripe Australia has just been incredible. And the security on all of that for us with all the encryption, it's to have that brand behind us as that reputable brand where people add their cards to something that they already know and their bank details to something that they already know, I think is a huge benefit to us as an unknown brand. Yeah.
So if people want to use it, they have to use the mobile app. Is that right? You can't do it via the website?
Yeah. At this point in time.
Was that an active design decision, or is that just you built the app first?
It was a design decision. I remember having a conversation about it. It definitely was that we built the app first, but the fact that this type of service is an on-the-go style service, that it needed to be app-based for the helpers to be able to action what they needed to action to be in order to be paid, in order to, you know, have the client's details on a whim, to be able to chat with people on the go. So for me, it didn't feel like the right decision to build it for desktop in the initial stages. It felt to me as though 9 times out of 10, you're generally actioning stuff like this on your phone anyway, especially if you're in the car. So yeah, that was a conscious decision.
So you are planning to enable it via the web, or it's not a high priority?
It's not a hugely high priority, but we are allowing for those initial steps for onboarding and an initial chat. So say you find someone in your find helpers, you're like, oh, like, look at that girl. This is our sort of our new pivot to have we built it the right way. There's so many nuances, but it's kind of like anything, demand and supply is generally the supply will say, hey, I've got 10 burgers to sell. Come and buy my burgers. Not the other way, where someone's like, I need to buy 10 burgers. Is anyone selling 10 burgers? Yeah. And then you go, oh, I hope that someone who's selling 10 burgers comes to me. And then I was lying in bed the other night and I was like, why are we not letting helpers spruik to their market? So the next pivot will be is that we want people to be able to spruik what they're selling, essentially. So taking it back and just saying, well, I'm Jessica. I've just started offering my services as a mother's helper, and I live in Avoca, and I have, you know, 3 days a week, and I'd really love to support you. And for them to not be waiting for jobs to be posted in Avoca to be able to say, hey, but to say, hey, I've got this service in Avoca, who wants it? Because we know from the data, it's showing that clients and helpers are growing at a very similar rate, but there's more clients. They're there for a reason. They might not know exactly what they want, but if someone says to you, hey, you never have to fold your laundry and put it away again for $50 a week, they might take it if they see that it's there. So,
absolutely. I mean, if I go on Amazon, right? Think of if Amazon was a wanted board, right? Because Amazon don't sell Amazon. I mean, they do sell Amazon products, but the it's like a fraction of a percent of what they sell. Most of it is a marketplace, right? So if I had to post on Amazon, I need a new suitcase, and wait for people to come to me and say, oh, we've got this suitcases. No, I go on there and I look at what suitcases are for sale, and I pick one if I like it and I buy it.
That's right. So yeah. And I started to think to myself, I was like, why did we build it this way? You don't know what you don't know. We're like, oh yeah, we'll make it a jobs board. And then I was thinking, I was like, but if you're an Uber passenger and I jump on, I'm on the Central Coast. We don't have Uber. It's growing.
I'm Central Coast as well.
Are you?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. So yeah, if you jump on to the Uber app, yeah, it's not great, right? But I'll check it. I'll go, oh yeah, I wonder if there's any Ubers nearby. But I've always got in the back of my head, oh, I'll call a taxi otherwise. Mm-hmm. But if you don't see people, if you don't see the little cars to see that there's anyone nearby, you're not using it. You're not posting and hoping that someone will come online while you're waiting for a cab. So yeah, it just sort of came to me that I was like, actually, we've got this real, I'm not suggesting that we change our app, but we are starting to pivot into the idea that, hey, people should be able to sell their services as well. Sell the time that they've got available, rather than just kind of hoping that something will fall in their lap that suits. So yeah, another major pivot will be coming soon. So yeah, I think it's just adapting and overcoming, because we weren't to know how people were going to use it. Not saying that it's not working this way, but it's like, how can you get the service into people's hands faster?
Yeah.
I don't even know how we got onto that topic. Yeah.
So I had a look. So I was asking about whether the services as a user, it can be used via the web or if it's just an app and if that was a conscious decision. So in terms of, as you just sort of said, selling what's on the truck, right? And telling people what's out there, your website is kind of a big shop window. And as of course, your app store listing is as well. So on your website, you link to the Google Play Store and the App Store, and these look great. And on the App Store, you actually have a clean 5-star rating, which is pretty good.
Thank you.
I just want to call out again, you know, having a 5-star rating on the App Store is awesome. So that's really good.
Thank you. Look, getting feedback and reviews is hard. I don't know if...
It really is hard, yeah.
Yeah, because I suppose it's going to be something that we learn along the way, but I think that you would get to a certain point before you start getting, you know, heaps of feedback. I think that most people will go deliver maybe negative feedback before they deliver good feedback as well. I think that's just human nature. I don't think that many people are having a terrible, terrible experience with our app at this point in time. I think that everyone's having quite a nice experience. We are incredibly hands-on. So all of the users, that is something that I never thought, that I didn't foresee in building an app and then subsequently a tech company. It's just how hands-on it would be, trying to teach people how you intend for them to use it. That in itself, I think, is a major challenge.
Yeah, I think the advice that I've heard in that space from who was it that started Airbnb? I can't remember his name now.
Yeah,
but the advice that he was giving was given at that early stages was to do things that don't scale.
Mm.
So your point earlier about, you know, helpers that don't have an appropriate avatar or an appropriate image, right?
Mm.
The example that they used at Airbnb was to help build legitimacy to their brand. For people that were signing up their apartments, they would offer to have a professional photographer to take photos of the apartment.
Of the place. Yeah.
But it wasn't a professional photographer. It was the founder
who
was going out of his way to have that one-on-one conversation with his clients.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah.
I love that.
But the advice that he had at the very early stages was you do things that don't scale.
Yeah.
Because that's where you have, and you've mentioned this before, like you've found that pivot point because you were talking to the clients, because you're talking to the users and you're actually getting in there day to day and manning the phones, so to speak.
100%.
And at this stage, you kind of have to.
Yeah. We've integrated now text messages that from our dashboard, which is incredible because it just comes from a Vili phone. But most of the comms come from me and I'm like, hey, it's Lucy, I'm the co-founder here. And I think that people like that. I think that people like it. We pick up the phone, they're like, oh, I saw you on the Today Show. I'm like, yeah. And they're like, oh, you know, that was really sweet and that was really nice. And then at the end of the phone call, they're like, oh, thank you so much for calling. I'm like, just as long as you don't think that we're some conglomerate, I want you to feel what we feel and how this is actually coming from a place, a really good place, and we really have best intentions for it to work for you. And if it doesn't work for you, or you don't need it anymore, or this chapter in your life has changed, or whatever, circumstance, budget, whatever, no hard feelings, that's cool, no worries. Just know that we're here next time and please tell your friends. So all of that.
And leave a review.
Do you mind if I turn your text message into a testimonial? Thank you.
See, Liam, this is what we need to get better at.
Yes. Like and subscribe. Smash that like button.
That's it.
Yes. Do you have any other questions, Matt?
Yeah, lots really. But I mean, I think maybe we can save them for another time or a deeper dive into some aspects of it. It's really exciting to see the success that you're having and the growth that you're having and where this is going. It's obviously a very incredible idea that the evidence speaks for itself in terms of how much appeal it has. But even without seeing the evidence, you feel it, you know, right away that yes, this is perfect. This is just what we need. Right. And like you said, you're at the end of your second year, which is a fantastic milestone. You know, you're seeing the growth. Did you say 2000 helpers?
Yeah. We've just cracked 2000 helpers. 2000. Which is really
amazing.
Yeah.
Are you just targeting Sydney, New South Wales at the moment, or are you looking Australia-wide?
You know what the wildest thing is? That we haven't spent a cent on marketing.
Wow.
Which is a whole other conversation.
Yeah.
So
that is a whole other conversation, and that's one that we need to have, I think.
Yeah. So
that's one that I need to have.
The power of the power of mothers groups and Look, we were given two incredible opportunities by Channel 9 to come and feature on the Today Show, which one around mental health and, you know, supporting parents in early parenthood and all of that sort of thing. But then the other side was also to talk from a tech perspective of this, you know, great new platform. So they both come hand in hand around the why and the heart and all of that. But I think because Susie and I live and breathe exactly what we're trying to achieve, there's sort of like a can't give up type mentality. So we've built the most incredible team around us. We really have. They're so incredibly talented at what they do. I couldn't ask for a more expert team for our age and stage in the business. It's just amazing. But also the girls that help us in our support team, they also are in that sort of position in life. So there's this real empathy there that I think shines through. And that's part of our mantra as well, in that to not lose focus of what it is that we're trying to achieve. Don't need to do it really fast, but yeah.
It's like it says on your website, right? Built by mums for mums.
Yeah, that's it. And that's the idea. So yeah, the marketing side of things is quite amazing. I suppose maybe I fabricated that a little bit. Obviously, we've got people to help us with our graphic designs and all of that. So that comes at a cost. And if you want to bundle that into marketing. But what I'm saying is that we don't, you know, we're not running paid ads or, you know, we haven't done a road show or done any experiential marketing or anything that puts this in front of people. This is just knowing that when we see the demand on Facebook groups, particularly people not knowing where to go to find what this practical help, and then a lot of people responding with, oh, I've got a cleaner, and then going, yeah, and then you can just feel it in their head. They're like, but cleaners don't do all of the things that I need done.
Yeah.
Even minding or helping me with picking up my kids or whatever. Like, it's just, you just need a replacement of who you are, the responsible adult in the home. So yeah, I know we're filling a niche. So yeah, hopefully watch this space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Well, congratulations again. And like I said, very exciting. And well, I mean, Liam, already watching the space, and I will be as well.
I know. Yeah. It's been amazing sort of sitting on the sideline here cheering for you guys.
Yeah.
And helping out wherever I can.
Yeah.
And trimming the fat when the deadlines are looming.
That's it. And look, we've had our first transaction go through in September of last year. So it hasn't even been a whole year that we've been running transactions. But what you said in a previous episode was around that whole idea of building your database based on a landing page. And so we did that for quite some time around just building that sort of hype, that sort of hype reel up. So that was going for about 8 months prior to actual launch. And that was around the time where we knew the helper side of the app was already out. We were building helper database, and then we went into the launch. So yeah, it's been lots of different chapters throughout. So growing, which is exciting.
Amazing. Well, how do we normally tie up when there's three on the call, Matt?
It depends.
It depends. It does. It always depends.
I don't know. There's probably a good segue from that second interruption there about it being past someone's bedtime.
Yes.
Very true. Very true.
Can you believe he's still not yet asleep?
I can believe it.
Oh, yeah.
No, he's Matt's only got two young ones himself.
They're both still up. Yeah.
Are they?
Yeah.
How old are they?
5 and 9 months.
9 months? Oh, Matt, you're in the thick of it. How's it going?
Yeah, good, good. Sleeping for me, at least, through? Anyway. For Megan, struggling a bit more.
Well, I know of an app that she can, that might be able to help her out.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, man. Got lots of helpers.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no doubt.
I was hoping to find someone this weekend for myself, and I had 3 applicants today, which I was like, I posted this morning and had 3 people, and one of them was from Wyoming. And I thought, oh, it's quite a fair way for you to come down. She seemed like a sweet girl. Anyway, sorry, that was a segue, but yeah.
It's all right.
Central Coast is actually quite big. So
yeah.
You think, oh, Central Coast might.
How did you guys meet if you're geographically not close? How do you
work together?
Right. Yeah. Nice. Love that.
Somewhere in the middle. Like, that was before Matt moved up to the Central Coast.
Not long before, but yeah. 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 So we moved up here in 2020.
Right. We were 2018 from Sydney as well. So anyway, but Susie and I only met just through this. Yeah. It's quite interesting for what we've done in such a well, it's been a while now, like it's been a few years, to work so closely with someone day in and day out, but not spend all that much time together. So the other weekend I was with her and her phone started ringing and it was Taylor Swift on the ringtone. And I was like, oh my God, you have Taylor Swift as your ringtone? And she was like, yeah, did you not know that? I was like, how would I know that? It's me ringing you. Like, I don't hear what your ringtone is. Like, what? It just went to show how she'd had that ringtone. She's like, yeah, for years. And then I was like, it's so interesting, it's, isn't it? Because I don't.
You get to know each other so well. Yeah. You never really get to meet each other.
Yeah. These little nuances around their, you know, little funny things. And so that was such a moment where I was like, that's weird. Do I even know you?
Well, I think that's a great note to end this on. So I just wanted to thank you, Lucy, for jumping onto the call tonight. This has been a conversation I've been bugging Matt for a while since we did record that episode we keep referring back to. And I thought this was going to be the perfect episode to follow that up. And you haven't disappointed.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you from me as well. I mean, given everything that we've spoken about, you're obviously incredibly busy, and you know, not just with the business, but obviously you're a very busy mum as well. And we do recognize that, you know, you have taken time you've made time for this conversation, and I just want to say really appreciate it.
Especially not at all, the last
late minute notice.
No, I loved it. And look, Liam was such an incredible help to us in a time of need, and just giving back direction when we were just so completely in the dark. Because, yeah, I mean, you could talk about it for days. I mean, the people that have come out of the woodwork with me to say, how did you do that? And I still don't know code.
It takes a village.
It does. It takes a village. And the who, not how, is a big thing in our company. Find who it is and you'll work out the answer. So, leaning on networks, if that was it, to give anyone any advice who was sort of thinking about this whole a landscape or just any moving into a landscape that isn't your area of expertise, it's just having lots of conversations and believing if the why is strong enough, I think you'll find a way is a big one for us as well. Yeah.
I love that. Love it.
Yeah.
So I think that's it for this week's episode of The Beer Driven Devs. I'm Liam Elliott.
I'm Matt Goldman.
And I'm Lucy Quinlan from Villy.
Cheers.
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 The Beer Driven Devs podcast is recorded and produced on Dharawal and Darkinjung land.
So, shall we kick off? Matt, you want to start or you want me to?
Why don't you?
Why don't I?
Okay. I can if you want.
Because I'm exhausted, that's why.
I mean, me too, and that's why I palmed it off to you, but I'll do it. I'll do it. Ready? Here we go.
Yeah, off you go.
Game places.
Careful.